A quick note before we start. About 70% of all people who listen to the show on Apple or Spotify don't follow the podcast. If you like the show, please hit that follow button. It ensures that you don't miss an episode, and it really helps spread awareness of the conversations we're having. And if you can leave a comment or a rating, that's even better. Thank you. Okay, let's get back to the show.
I'm Andrew Kitley, and this is my podcast, The Invisible Gift, a show about turning disability into possibility. From a young age, I was told I had a disability that would make it impossible for me to achieve and flourish in life. I struggled in school and felt I was not truly understood or supported. On my long road to becoming the owner of multiple businesses, I have learned that dyslexia was not my disability, but rather my invisible gift. My dyslexia challenged me every day, but it was also what made me into an independent thinker, a creative, and gave me that hard-working mindset that has taught me to never be discouraged by failure. I realised there are many people out there just like me. So I wanted to learn more about them and dyslexia itself. I realised I needed a way to do this which was great for dyslexics, which obviously rules out writing anything down and makes total sense why a podcast is perfect. I'm excited to be sharing this journey with you as we learn more about dyslexia, the incredible people that thrive with it, and how we can all transform our greatest challenge into our invisible gift. Welcome to my podcast. Today, my guest is entrepreneur Chris Donnelly. He is the CEO of Verb Brands, a luxury digital agency he founded in his dorm room. The company is now worth millions of pounds. I spoke to Chris about his school years, his support network, and how he grew his company. But to begin, we spoke about how he first learnt he had dyslexia. So Chris, thank you for coming on the Invisible Gift podcast.
Thank you.
So when did you first realise you had dyslexia?
13. Yeah, probably 13. Yeah, so instead of writing in exams, because I had dyspraxia as well, I got given a laptop in the exams and extra time, and that was about 13 years old, yeah, roughly.
Did you go to private or
public? Yeah, private school, yeah.
Private school. That's because when you said I had a dyslexia teacher tell me, I was like, wow.
I think she might have been an English teacher, but she
specialised.
She did the dyslexia classes, which is effectively like coping mechanisms.
Well, that's great because you're the first person I've spoken to that went to a private school with dyslexia, which is now fascinating me already. So how was that? Were you really supported at school then because of that? Well, I suppose you wouldn't know any different.
Yeah, I mean, my younger brother went to the same school and has just recently, he's like 26 now, he's had a professional job for 6 years or something, and he's just found out that he's got dyslexia. So like they obviously can miss it. I think my dyslexia was quite pronounced. So I think that I probably did get a lot of support with it, actually. Yeah, thinking about it now, like I think my coping mechanisms for dyslexia are fantastic coping mechanisms for life in general. But you realize it quite quickly that you just like house and horse for me, you know, for years and years, I still couldn't tell you why house is spelt house and horse is spelt horse. But to me, I know that they're spelt the way they are because I've kind of learnt around that. But yeah, I mean, I got supported a lot in that. This lady who was an English teacher, you went into her room, which is about the same size as this room. And like, on the wall was like Richard Branson, you know, 4 or 5 other entrepreneurs who were, dyslexic, who had like challenging learning difficulties. And like, to be honest, I know it's slightly cliche, I work for myself and so on, but like that was quite defining, you know, like she was quite, you know, she was like, these people are seriously successful and they all have dyslexia and can't spell and are shit with the time. And yeah, like
I think that's amazing.
It is amazing. Yeah,
because
absolutely amazing.
If I knew, so when I found out I had dyslexia, it was just like, right, so you just learn differently. That was about the extent of the explanation I got. If I could see people that have done amazing things, I didn't really discover that till I call myself a late bloomer because I left school. I started doing more entrepreneurial stuff when I was younger, and then somehow I got that knocked out of me. And then I went into a normal job. I become a scaffolder, which was fun. And then I started a personal development journey. And that's when I realized all these amazing entrepreneurs and stuff like that, because I didn't know anything about like Richard Branson. I didn't know he was that. Mm. But to have a teacher tell you...
Cool teacher. I mean, I don't think most teachers were like that, but she
no.
she could see that, for example, one of my good friends was dyslexic as well, that we were both super competitive. Like, we were really, really into sport and all the rest of it. And yet we were shit at school.
Yeah.
So bad at school. And we were at a school that obviously pushed you quite hard. And I think for her, she kind of found a way of like motivating us towards something, which I think was really smart from her to give you that like thing to aim at. And say like you think differently and it's okay and it's fine and it's cool that you do.
Mm.
I think that's quite a message to give kids. And I don't think that's quite regular.
And what were you awesome at school?
Was it awesome at?
Yeah, because I find people who have dyslexia were awesome at one or two aspects at school, which was really pushed them apart.
I was, until I got quite injured later on, I was very good at rugby and had like a really, really super successful rugby career that went beyond like, our school team was probably the best in the country anyway, but I ended up playing for like academies and so on. And so rugby was probably it. General sport was, I was always relatively good at. But then subject wise, I loved English and I loved design and technology. And I think, you know, design and technology, you sort of make stuff, you build stuff, you can be creative. And then English literature was great because, again, it was creative writing and so on, which always came back with like red lines through everything. Spelling was terrible on everything. And then they gave me a laptop. So,
and that changed everything.
Yeah, because actually, I mean, it's my friends always said, and I think that it's because I never really talked about how bad dyslexia can be, when how much of an annoyance it can be, actually.
Hmm.
But they always used to think it was like really unfair that I got a laptop and that in an exam. Mm. And I was like, to be honest, when you end up being good at touch typing, which I was basically taught to touch type immediately because my writing was appalling. Mm. Touch typing is one, a sick skill, but two, like in an exam, 60 words a minute, you know, like whereas like everyone else is writing. So it kind of felt like a bit of an advantage. But if I hadn't had spell check, it would have been like, you couldn't read most of it. So, you know.
Yeah. And I had, this thing that looked like a calculator, right, that you typed the word in. This makes me sound really old. I can't stand this. You even saying of a laptop. I was thinking when I was at school, the screens were still green. God, and I'm only 37. The gap is just strange. I had the thing that looked like a calculator, and you had to type in the spelling that you think it was, and it predicted what it actually was. It was useless. It never predicted the right word. I didn't even know if I was starting the word with the right letter.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know an enormous amount about dyslexia. I mean, I probably know more than the average person, but I could tell you that a calculator thought that wouldn't work because, like, I spell phonetically, but not every dyslexic person does.
No.
And so, like, how's that going to work? So, yeah, I feel for you, man.
Well, that's why I love technology now, because my iPhone, it guesses so spot on every time. It just changes words. I don't want it to change now.
When I was in sixth form at school, I ended up helping lead the dyslexia classes at school. And the technology they had by the end was phenomenal.
Because, dyslexia classes?
Yeah. So like by the time I was in sixth form, they had, I think we were one of the first few years that actually dedicated any time to dyslexia. But by the time we were in sixth form, we as the students were running classes for the youngsters who... We had things like a microphone where they would speak into it and it would just write it for them and it would write it perfectly. And like, there was some pretty cool tech coming out by the time we were in sixth form. And yeah, we ran these classes for people who struggled with their dyslexia and other things towards the end. So that's probably why I learned a little bit more about it.
So we were speaking before, you're an entrepreneur. You have how many staff?
About 60.
60 staff?
Yeah.
How old are you?
29.
Wow. It's impressive. I assume you get your entrepreneurial spirit from dyslexia. Or would you say that's not necessarily the case?
I have no idea, to be honest with you. My girlfriend, I actually told my girlfriend I was doing this today, and she was like, that's so funny that you're doing that because I think you're such a weirdo. And I was like, what do you mean? She was like, you just think differently. And I think that when people talk about entrepreneurs, entrepreneurs do just think a little bit differently. You know, they think that things are possible where other people think they're not possible, and they see things that people probably wouldn't see normally. And so possibly, I mean, my older brother is severely dyslexic and had always challenged in school, and he's an entrepreneur. And my dad, we got my dad diagnosed for dyslexia. He's a successful entrepreneur. Got him diagnosed later in life. He's very dyslexic. And so, like, my younger brother's dyslexic, you know, like, it's a, and he's very entrepreneurial. So I think there has to be a weird link. And then
it's all comes back down to the fear factor of life. I always say, I've said this a lot of people and everyone agrees, because you fail so much as a student, when you come out into the real world, failure doesn't scare you.
Yeah.
And I think that's what it is. Because to start businesses and be a leader and do all these things, you've got to have real confidence that it's going to work. And I think by failing, you don't think of it any other way. And it's funny you say your girlfriend says, I just think you think differently. Before I started this podcast, my girlfriend's always known I've been dyslexic, but we've never spoken about it because we never put it in the equation. It's just that I don't look at anything like anyone else. I just look at it completely differently. And I think this is the whole thing going back with the failure thing.
Yeah.
How do you find running a business? So for me, I run a few businesses and I say I run businesses, and I've been having this conversation today a lot.
I feel like I know what you're going to say.
I don't actually do anything. I literally... If people have a problem, they come to me. Yeah. Other than that, I have all the other people that run the business. Yeah. And I just come up with the ideas and other people do it for me. Is that kind of the...
Yeah, my poor business partner. so yeah, I mean, I have ADD as well.
Ah, so do I.
So like, the prospect sometimes, even the idea of having to sit down and do like a very admin-based task... I get the heebie-jeebies, but I put it off until the last minute, literally the last minute. And then I'm like, oh my fucking God, I've got to do this. And then I'll normally get someone else to help me with it. And my business partner, he joined the business a few years after I set it up. And to be honest, he is, you know, the cliche fucking statements, but yin yang sort of thing. He is a much better and much more detail orientated than I am. And so we have a relationship that works perfectly where, you know, it's not like I've delegated everything to him, but I have a very set rule set that I try and execute within the business, which is like vision, mission, marketing. I do really enjoy. It's not that admin heavy. My job is always kind of changing because I'm always trying to grow the company. And like COVID, obviously human tragedy first and foremost, but like it's been a fascinating and challenging and interesting part of business, you know, to manage this. So yeah, I'm like you. Like I don't necessarily some days know what my job is, but it's certainly there somewhere.
I find it fascinating to hear all the similarities between Chris and myself, how both of us wasn't intimidated by failure. I agree with Chris that there must be a link between entrepreneurship and dyslexia. I think this is evident in the fact that every dyslexic person I'm friends with owns or manages a business and is an entrepreneur. My conversation with Chris then moved on to the influence his family, friends and parents have on him. We also spoke about Chris's experience at school and the tremendous support he got for his dyslexia. But first, let's hear about Chris's family. The road I live on, the average age is like 70-something. It's right. Ridiculous. But they have loads of community meetings and do stuff together, like drinking nights, like safari suppers, all stuff like that. And these people, the most interesting group of people you could put, they've all so highly achieved in their lives that it's always really interesting. And a guy I spoke to who lives on the road, who's also dyslexic, said to me, he was talking about his son. His son's now 25. He went, oh, he's starting up his own business. And he said, Dad, I don't really know what to do. And he was like, what do you love doing? And he said, I love doing this, this, and this. And he went, just go and do a business. And it was straight out of university. And he was like, well, I've got no experience. And he went, it doesn't matter. You believe in yourself, you go do what you want to do. And I think if you've got a parent like that, or who's done it, because he was massively successful, when you've got a parent that does that, it kind of it makes you think, yeah, I've got that confidence.
But 100%. 100%. Like, it is a total privilege. Like, I think that my dad is a successful small business owner,
yeah.
but has been a successful small business owner forever, basically. And so he's never built like a massive company. So he's actually, mindset wise, I feel like he came from a family that wasn't like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so he kind of set his expectations here.
Higher.
And then we came along afterwards with my dad being an amazing dad and all the rest of it. And our expectations just were higher. You know, we would probably take more risks and we probably did want to build bigger companies. But I think we would never have been like that. And then my older brother's absolutely bonkers. But he probably is the biggest influence on my business life because he just believes anything is possible. It's not even he's putting it on. I know loads of entrepreneurs that put that stuff on. He genuinely believes anything's possible. He's like a 1,000 ideas a minute guy.
Most people in your family are dyslexic, is that right?
Yeah.
That must be nice as well, because not only are they a support network, they also get it.
My mum's not.
Yes.
And so we do have this. I mean, obviously we don't talk about dyslexia like day to day. We talk about business a lot. As a family, I suppose, actually.
Now you've made me jealous. I can't talk about business in my family.
Yeah.
They all tell me to have a day off. So he's talking about work again. Shut him up.
Yeah, like I would say this morning I've probably had ongoing WhatsApp conversations with both my brothers and my dad, roughly around, obviously, life and business, all morning this morning. But my mum is continuously on the WhatsApp group correcting our spelling. And she's like, she always says it's so sweet. It reminds me of when you guys were young. She doesn't do it to annoy us. She like almost, because now she knows that we've taught ourselves around spelling, you know?
Yeah.
That's how I think about it anyway. But like, she always says that's how you used to spell when you were a kid. And it's always so funny because she was obviously so involved with us trying to get past being shit at education.
Yeah.
That she's obviously very happy that we're all, you know, grown ups and, doing okay in life and so on. My older brother, for example, his business is now successful. It's like a remote workspace that's built around COVID in a way. But he came up with that idea and we talked about it on a WhatsApp group between us brothers for months and they launched it. And basically we did all the strat over the WhatsApp.
Wow.
Yeah, it's good.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So did you have any behavioral issues at school? Or were you pretty good? Because I've found a real mixed bag with this one.
Yeah, no, I've got in trouble a lot. I got suspended at one point. I mean, I always did like, I was heavily involved in school. I always think it kind of saved me at school. I was heavily involved in this charity thing at school where you would like get involved in building schools abroad, get involved in like building water wells and... donating to charity, raising money. It was this thing. And in the end, but in sixth form, I was in charge of it. It was, I can't remember what it was called now. Round Square. Anyway, I think that kind of saved me because on the other side of life at school, I was awful at turning up to class.
Yeah.
I'm late to everything generally.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'd love to blame that.
You're
on
right. Yeah. You were late.
I was late today. But I'm late to everything. You know, I'm terrible at spelling and my attention to stuff can,
detail,
you know, I daydream a lot. And I think that stuff didn't help. And then also just probably was willing to give my opinion back to a teacher. And so I got in trouble a lot at school. But I think in a weird sense, because my older brother had got in so much trouble at school, he'd been kicked out of every school, that my parents were always like, yeah, Chris is bad, but like, not that bad. You know? I mean, I think it kind of part and parcel with the family, to be honest.
You've inadvertently sold private schools to me now, because me and my partner, we always have this conversation about when we have kids about sending them to private school. And you've just said one of the things that you liked was this kind of charity thing. And your experience from the 10 minutes we've been speaking between our schools are like worlds apart. Mine was, now you've described it, mine sounded like prison. So it was interesting to hear that experience. So,
well, it is a weird one because I think that anyone who ever, like, obviously you don't pick your school and all the rest of it, but anyone who ever says that like private school doesn't give you a bit of a leg up.
Hmm.
I think obviously people, you know, in many cases it doesn't, in many cases it does or whatever. But for me personally, thinking about my school in comparison to most of my friends from university weren't from private school. A lot of my friends nowadays from work aren't from private school. The comparison in the story is crazy. Absolutely crazy. Like I was at school, boarding school, full time. You know, I lived with all of my friends. You know, we had dinner, we had every meal at school. We would have, you know, we would have things to do until 9:30 at night every night. You know, like it was very structured.
That sounds amazing.
Amazing sport. Like the facilities were unbelievable. The dyslexia thing, I think, is really a defining thing in my life. Like the memory. Her name was Mrs. Blunden Lee.
Yes. Well done.
and I just remember this wall, and I really hope it's still there, of entrepreneurs on the wall.
Is your goal to get on that wall?
I haven't even ever thought about that.
Now you have. See? So now you're going to try and achieve that.
Well, I mean, I think I would certainly be interested in going back to school or other schools to say that, because when you think you're a dumbass,
yeah,
it's actually not a great feeling.
No.
And then it'd be nice to be like, you just think a bit more creatively and, you know, outside of the world of education and spelling and grammar and like sentence structure and paragraphs, all the sort of bullshit, which obviously is important. You can be super creative and really good at other stuff. And yeah. I think that's a nice, and to Miss Blunden Lee obviously drilled that into me. So I think that's a really awesome. And it's funny, someone said at the beginning of this, blue paper, I remember all the stuff that was given or provided by teachers and, you know, like other situations I found myself in, like glasses, blue lens glasses, special pens, you know, everything. I can remember it now, thinking about it more. And obviously that's massive help, massive support.
So you do marketing, that's your business. You obviously, now my partner's in marketing and she spends 75% of her day in meetings with clients and internal meetings and stuff like that. How do you handle that when you say you have a problem with concentrating? Do you not find that a problem? Or do you have, because I know they started doing like I have standing meetings.
Yeah.
Like when I interview someone, we don't sit in a room and interview, we go for a walk. So I'll meet them and we just walk somewhere and talk because I can't sit down or I lose attention.
So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I do a lot of meetings.
Yeah.
And especially this Zoom culture. Ugh. I mean, the expectation at the beginning was that everything was just transferred to Zoom. And I remember really struggling with it because I hate, my job before was actually meetings, moving around place to place. I'd do a bunch of new business, a bunch of marketing, a bunch of like top level strategy work on accounts. That stuff I find interesting and fun. If I'm moving around town, I'm on the tube a lot, I'm, you know, that was kind of fine. However, it transitioned from that to being in my attic at home in front of my laptop on Zooms 8 hours a day. At that point in time, I was like, I actually don't know if I can do this. Like I was getting to a point where I was like, I would much prefer my life before, which was chaos. I was flying every week. I was back and forth in New York. I was around London the whole time. But being in a room the size of this all day on a laptop, I was like, no way, I can't handle it. And so my attention thing, I think you train yourself. And I think it's a lesson I learned last year, is I probably let myself get too far away from the detail of my business, which is I wasn't heavily involved in the finance conversations anymore. Wasn't that involved in the operational conversations of the business. And I think that business maybe suffered because of it. And now I've brought myself back in and I'm being really disciplined with myself to say, some of this shit, even though you've got attention problems, even though you're dyslexic and all the rest of it, like buck up, get your shit together, get through a couple of key meetings. And like that again, I think is key for me to do, because like, that was my goal this year, was to like get back involved in understanding finance and operations in my own business, because I didn't want to become that person who's like totally useless. Like I've got friends who my dad, for example, is actually hilarious, because he had a PA for most of his life.
Yeah,
he's totally useless at everything.
Yeah, you know? I'm falling into that trap. I just said in the last chat, my PA does everything for me.
Yeah,
and I actually need that. Someone phoned me the other day and said, oh, we've got a meeting, blah, 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 in a couple of days. And I was like, and she was on holiday.
Yeah.
And I realized I'd not put anything in my diaries, and I was absolutely, and I phoned her up, and she'd actually been working in a holiday to make sure everything I'd done was all right. And I was like, oh, thank God for that. But you're right. Now you've said that, I'm going to have to change something about that, because I am useless without her.
So, I mean, someone said like last year to someone in the company was struggling a lot with their own attention problems and also what the impact that was having on their life, in that they were so disorganized, they were struggling a little bit to find motivation because they didn't know what they were aiming at.
Yeah.
Whereas I've always thought, it's kind of like what we were saying at the beginning, you can create a set of, not necessarily like grandiose goals, but like you can create a set of things to aim at that brings your life up to, you know, what you think it should be. Mm. And then you can have bigger plans.
Yeah.
And at the moment, I think that this
like
is
a
the
minimum
most
standard.
Yeah. This is the most organized I've been with my life for a long time. And it's because I've set myself regimented routines, and which aren't that evident to everyone, but like I try and exercise X many times a week. I try and, you know, do the work that I otherwise would have palmed off on people.
Yeah.
And I feel much more confident in the business. The business is absolutely flying for the first time in a while. And through COVID, I'm surprised to say that. But I think, again, it comes down to just being brutally honest with myself about defects and then not running away from them, because that's what I've done for the last couple of years, which hasn't been.
But I suppose, again, that comes back to the whole point of you saying defects and not running away from them. That comes back from a childhood where you knew you had to overcome certain obstacles early on that allows you to now in your later life just go, no, this is how we're doing it and this is where I'm going with it.
Mm.
So do you, for me, I struggle with a lot of organisation skills. Are you good with organisation skills? Because I've met two schools of thought on this. I'm terrible. I have a culture in my teams that they've got to tell me when I'm doing something shit, and they've got to really push back on me, because I always say I like people really up front. If something's not working right, I want them to tell me. I think the correct term they use is upward management. So I say to the team, if I'm doing something wrong or stupid, you've got to tell me. Don't feel like you can't. I need that in my life. Do you find, and the main thing they argue about is, not argue about, the main thing they tell me off about is organisation skills.
Yeah.
Are you good with organisation skills, or?
I don't know if I think I'm a hell of a lot better than I was. But if you ask anyone around me, fucking awful. Dreadful. I mean, my girlfriend is, and anyone who listens to this who knows Louise and I will know that Louise is the most organised person on the planet. I mean, she is remarkable.
It's really funny that you say about your partner. Christina's my absolute counter opposite, and like you, the most like your partner, the most organized person in the world. And I drive her insane with my unorganized. And so the other day she was brilliant. She said, right, I was stressing out because Finn's just getting busier and busier. And she said, right, let's write down a to-do list of everything you've got to do. We filled out 3 A4 pages, and she was like, this is in your head.
Yeah.
Are you not worried? How are you balancing all this? And she writes stuff out and color codes it and puts post-it notes everywhere, because her job role in marketing, she's like a project manager, client liaison sort of thing. So she's used to planning everything. And she's like, how are you functioning like that? And does it?
That's the same. I mean, literally the same. And I think, I don't know, I never want to the point that your mentors make, I never don't want to be me.
Yeah.
Like I'm really, it was hard graft, you know, to bring myself up to level. And I think that I never don't want to think like I think, because I'm really happy with how I've got in, certainly with regards to business. But yeah, Louise is my counter opposite. And that works. we've just bought a house together, and it's been fascinating, because it's obviously we've been together 8 years. There's not a huge amount that you have to do in terms of structure, rather than buying a house and commissioning architects and all that sort of stuff. And we're going through that now, and it's fascinating, because you obviously put together a list of architects. I wrote nothing down. You know, she wanted to create an architect tracking planning document, whereas like I had the calls in my head. I knew what stage we were at. I'm like, okay, I'm going to come to that. And then she was like, okay, how would you know what Bob said? And I was like, this is exactly what Bob said. And I told her. She was like, that is what Bob said. Yeah. And I was like, it's just how my mind works. It's just very different. But I wouldn't, you know, wouldn't change it.
I say that. So whenever we go and have conversations, I come out and she was like, what did they say? And I repeat word for word what they said. She's gone, you can't remember anything. And this is what you remember, these things.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
But then one of the things actually with dyslexia that I always was taught about myself specifically, and it's not the same as everyone who has dyslexia, but I learn through listening
audio, yeah,
way better than I do from reading.
Yeah.
And so at school, they used to give me audio of books, which again, is actually phenomenal.
But I listen to audio books. Yeah. I love them.
But like at that, you know, what's that? Like I'm 29 now, so that was like when I was 13. The school was preparing the audio for the books. The audio didn't exist. That's pretty good, right?
Wow.
I know. Thinking about that now. But
what school did you go to? I think they need a shout out.
I went to Wellington College.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
It was a really, really good school.
Yeah.
It was a really, really good
school. I know people that went there. Yeah, it's an amazing school. That makes...
Yeah, it was a really good school.
They always said that... We've spoken about, they weren't dyslexic, but they spoke about how good they were with dyslexic people at that school. So that's quite interesting.
I think about some of my friends and I who left school with really good results and think, how did we leave with good results? And I think it was the school just made you. They just made you leave with good results.
But doesn't this show what schools can do to younger people?
For sure.
Because like your experience is there, I can't relate to, and probably a lot of people listening can't relate to, but we can all appreciate how amazing that is. You're like, yeah, unbelievable.
I also sort of came to a point where like I became aware that I'd obviously got a lot of help with my, and I think my mum was pretty like critical in that as well. Like she probably did loads of dyslexia research when we were younger about how to overcome that stuff. And that's probably why loads of it was expedited so much that Nick and I got so much support with it. But I'm so aware now that like so many people think of it as a really bad thing. Like, and it kind of, you know, it can lead to some serious anxiety and all the rest of it. And I know people at the moment that I'm helping with their businesses that their confidence in their abilities are really smashed by the fact that like they're not a good writer. Whereas it doesn't matter, you know, like it doesn't matter. Like you don't, I mean, Richard Branson is actually really terrible at writing. I mean, it's a miracle that he's released books. And obviously there's a ghostwriter, you know, there's someone else wrote those books, you know, like he probably read to someone, you know. And I think it is a set of coping mechanisms that you create for yourself. And you can be like everyone else, but you're probably going to be more creative.
I couldn't believe the difference between mine and Chris's experience, his at public school and mine at state, and the support he got compared to mine. The one thing we do agree on, though, is that our...
Hi, everyone. I just have a quick announcement that I'm really excited to share. We're launching the Invisible Gift Community, a platform designed to provide support and resources for neurodivergent individuals. I've always been passionate about sharing conversations around being neurodivergent, raising awareness and promoting understanding, but I want to do more. So now the Invisible Gift website will offer a range of tools and resources to help neurodivergent individuals navigate the challenges any one of us can face on a daily basis. This includes information about workplace accommodations, tips for managing sensory overload, advice on how to communicate effectively, information for how to get the most out of a neurodivergent child's education, as well as providing the building blocks for them to have a successful life and much more. But to do this, we need your input. We are looking for therapists, influencers, business leaders, HR, and brand representatives to provide their input and support. If you're one of these people that wants to support neurodivergence, or if you just believe you can really help out, send my team an email on hello@theinvisiblegift.com and you can find more information on the Invisible Gift website. With your help, we can really turn neurodiversity into possibility. Okay, back to the show.
Experiencing an organization is very similar. Planning is crucial for dyslexics, and later on we'll hear about Chris's plans for the future. But first of all, let's acknowledge the economic elephant in the room, COVID. We're here out of pandemic has turned Verb, like most other companies, upside down. Where do you sit in the company? Are you head of creative when you first started? I know, obviously, you're a bit past that.
It's transforming at the moment to be more back involved in strategy and creative than I have been for a long time.
Hmm.
But I suppose I actually used to do a lot of copy work.
Hmm.
I used to do a lot of,
wow.
Yeah. And it's not that my copy or my prose or anything was perfect, but I would always write the thing that the consumer wanted to hear.
Hmm.
So like the tagline that resonated with someone as to why a product was important, or like why does someone buy Louis Vuitton, you know, like I could find the things that consumers wanted to hear, then someone would need to copyright it afterwards, you know. I would come up with the ideas, I'd come up with like the way that the consumer will buy it. And at the moment, you know, I'm doing a lot of work on outside of Verb in my sort of spare time, whatever that means, on helping other people with tech startups, with their businesses. And I've really enjoyed it because I'm sort of coming up with ideas about how people resonate with products and so on. And I'm working with professional copywriters and we're really gelling, you know, really creating something that's cool. Whereas I'm just not writing it.
Hmm.
So in Verb nowadays, my job is where the company's going, you know, where do we want to be in a few years' time? What's the company product, which is changing and adapting all the time. And then I am heavily involved in our culture, and that's obviously massive flux at the moment because of everything that's going on. And that's kind of it. I mean, you don't want to give yourself too many jobs.
No, you sound like you're... That's why when you said spare time, I was like, what spare time?
Yeah, I mean, I've been okay recently. I mean, pre-COVID, I don't know how I was living like I was living. I was flying back and forth to New York on an almost weekly, bi-weekly basis. And I was working crazy hours on either side, doing loads of client entertaining. And then suddenly lockdown hit. And I honestly, I mean, I feel awful saying this, but like, I feel a bit guilty as well. It was amazing for me.
It was amazing for a lot of people.
It was just phenomenal. I mean, I was at home. I could eat better. I stopped drinking as much. I stopped smoking. Spent loads of time with my girlfriend. I saw my friends and family more. Business suffered enormously.
Hmm.
But from a personal perspective, it was great. It was, you know, very, very chill for the first time in years. And it's been a real reset for me to refocus on like everything I want to do moving forwards.
Do you find though, that's, again, this is what I have with, I don't know if your mind's like this. I think Christina probably called me scatty, but it's not in the fact that I do silly things. My brain just constantly evolves. When anyone says anything, I can see a business idea in it or how they can improve things. I very rarely ever say anything, but I sit there, my brain just constantly takes their ideas that they might have just dropped in a random conversation, and I'm already working it through. And I found that when, it's so funny, we're using terms like pre-COVID like it's been around forever. Oh, it feels like saying out of a TV show, doesn't it? So I found that when COVID hit, I stopped focusing on everything like that, and it allowed my brain to relax a little bit. And then I refocused on what I was doing. Our business is growing, and I just instantly realized that I'd been getting lost in the wrong shit for too long. And this kind of redirected me back to where I needed to be. But
entirely.
I think that's the brain just constantly going over and over and over again.
Yeah, I think it will go down as a period that is like unbelievably good for some businesses. I mean, obviously unbelievably bad for a lot of businesses, but for me, my work day now is so fundamentally different to how it was before, and it is so much better for it. Like my value add to the company is so good right now. And I think before I was just getting lost in loads of like quite meaningless stuff.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes, you know, it certainly lit a fire up the arse. Because, you know, we lost something like half our revenue in 10 days, which was quite the scary thing, you know, phone calls for 10 days. But yeah, we're a much better business for it now. And I think I'm better for it now as well, because you go back to like, what is it that makes me work the best that I can work? Redesign that and you're off again. And I feel much healthier because of that, for sure.
But when COVID happens, I sit on some board of directors and they phoned me and they asked me about what's going to happen. And the answer to that question is I have no idea, because I don't. But what I found was when that happened, my mind instantly started coming up with ways to pivot to make the business work in different environments. And is that the sort of thing you do? Do you see pivot points or ways you can adapt very quickly when these come up?
Yeah, I mean, I've been saying this a lot recently, and I think that I'll come back to another point you made earlier, but COVID kind of has brought out the absolute best in me in terms of my business leadership, my strategic thinking that I've seen in years. Like, Verb had got to a point where super successful, super profitable, fast growing company, you know, we weren't in any trouble, you know, it was good. And yet COVID did hit us really hard, and yet off the back of it now, Verb is a better business, it's better run, it's better thought out, and all of that came from the pressure and then ideas to pivot the company, change the company, adapt the company. And it's weird when you look back, we've achieved so much, and all of it kind of came from ideas that we had in those first few weeks.
So we can't not talk about goals, because this is something that I found dyslexic people, successful dyslexic people are good at. Do you write down your goals? Is it something you have in the forefront of your mind? Do you reflect on them a lot?
I suppose yes. I suppose you
have got a WhatsApp group that keeps you on board, but yeah.
I don't know, over the years I've been pretty lucky to have some good mentors as well in business. I mean, I've paid a lot for them, but
yeah,
I've had some good mentors, and I think that I try and draw a map, like a forecast map of the company, every 6 months basically, which is like, you know, the stuff that probably seems a bit shallow, but you know, turnover, profit, growth, type of client, size of client, you know, those basic things, like getting, you know, maintaining a really good company culture and having measurable things on it. And then also like the fame of the company, you know, those are the things that sit at the top of our map. And then the map is built around getting to those things. And then from a personal perspective, I also do that every 6 months. And it started with, my dad said every year for New Year's resolutions, he kind of always used to write 5 things down. Like, I want to achieve these 5 things this year. What a great habit that's been. So I do that every year. My girlfriend now does it. It's actually quite sweet that she took it on from our family. But I now do it every sort of 6 months. And I think, again, it's just, if you don't have somewhere to aim at, sometimes people like me, I could lose, you know, an entire week to gaming. You know, I could lose an entire week to nothing, to Netflix, to YouTube, you know, to, I love sport. And so I could lose a whole week to that. And I think sometimes I just need something points me in the right direction. I also think that the biggest thing that's changed in my life is trying to bring people in who hold me to account. Because I don't have a boss and never have had a boss, but having people there to be like, why haven't you hit your number? Like, why aren't you on target? You know, because you forgive yourself pretty easily.
Yeah.
Why am I off target?
Yeah.
These reasons couldn't help them. Whereas like someone objective goes, hang on a minute, you know, this is a business. And I think, you know, those, that, again, it's about putting, you know, what are those things called in the bowling alley? Railings. It's like putting a few railings up in your life. And I think that's helped me infinitely, to be honest with you.
Yeah. What I find funny is, because dyslexic people obviously find planning hard. But the second you say about goals, that's why I asked you this question. It's really strange. Ask a dyslexic person to plan, they go, nah. You go, what about your goals? Yeah, right. I could tell you every single one of my goals. And it's like, well, so you can really plan. It's, I always say about planning, goals is, if you don't have goals, how do you, in life, it's not the big decisions, it's the micro decisions you make every day. How do you make them decisions if you don't know where you would need to be going? And a lot of people, when I help some businesses out, they said to me, well, I don't know, I started here and I ended up here and I don't know how. And I was like, well, there's no clear goals, and you've made them micro decisions all the time. And what's really funny is I sit there telling people how to plan, when the one thing I say to everyone is I'm useless at planning. And it's,
you might be good at goal setting though.
I mean, yeah,
most of the good entrepreneurs I know are good at goal setting, and I think that it's nice sometimes. So that map I was telling you about, like, it's built in a way that I come up with goals, and then the map retrospectively builds the plan.
Yes. You know?
And that's what my team helped me do, is fill that in. But people like you and I hopefully will always be good at saying this is what I want to aim at. And one of the things I've really liked is I help a guy who's a few years younger with an agency. And I probably consult with him like once every quarter, just from a time perspective. Actually consulting properly is exhausting.
Yeah.
And so I go in, we set targets. You know, I say, I think you probably you could push that. You know, you could push that a little bit further. You could push the business further. And he's gone from being, you know, two person to a 15 person agency in a year and a half. He's been going 6 years. And it's just because having that goal, micro decisions every day go towards the goal. It's it's not rocket science. It's just...
You say about your, you've just made me realize, you said about writing your goals down. So we review ours every 6 months. But when we first wrote down goals, we used to do it once a year. And we used to write down our goals on cards and put them on the Christmas tree. And we put the Christmas tree away every year because it was a plastic one. And when we took the Christmas tree out the next year, we could review all our goals
to
see if
we've hit. What my dad does.
Wow.
Identical.
Wow. That's amazing.
Identical to what my dad. So we now do it on our phones now.
Yeah. Yeah.
But when we were younger, my dad would put the resolutions cards in with the Christmas stuff. And they would come out every year and you'd almost forget they were coming.
Yeah.
You'd be like, oh, did I do those things?
Yeah.
Whereas now we're more proactively on them in a business sense, but that's identical to my family.
Wow.
Like, I mean, my dad did that.
I was clearly
year.
Born in the wrong family. So yeah. Right. So what's your plans for the next 12 months?
I think personally, I'd love to keep up I'm seeing my friends loads at the moment, which I haven't done for a long time. And I'm absolutely loving that. Exercising, you know, we've just bought a house. So I'm going to be doing up the house, full renovation, which should be fun. From a business sense, I think that we probably could become the best we've ever been. And that's by effectively, we have recently just won our best clients ever during COVID. So I think Verb, I would expect Verb to be 25% bigger by the end of next year. And this year we'll probably end at the same point as we went in, even though COVID nearly killed us. And then, yeah, I want the business to get the recognition that it should for doing the work that it does.
So this podcast is called The Invisible Gift. What would you say your invisible gift is?
Fucking hell. I suppose, like I said at the beginning, if I have a challenge or like a problem, a big thing coming up, I'm never worried. You know, like I've spent a lot of time talking to people about strategy or business or life, and I think a lot of people have a lot of anxiety or fear or lack of confidence about things that are coming up. Never even crosses my mind. You know, I will walk into any situation because I know that I will work a way through the situation. I don't need to know what the situation is. I went on holiday last week and I just basically half forgot to pack. And then Lou was like, you need to. And I was like, I haven't got any time. I did have time. I could have done it. But then at the last minute, I was like, I'll buy some stuff at the airport, I'll buy some stuff when I get there.
Oh my God, it's like you've stolen my mind. That's what I do all the time.
I just think I'm good at thinking on my feet. I'm good at finding a way through a problem. Yeah. I'm actually not the type of entrepreneur that's ever going to come up with a £1 billion idea. I just know that.
Yeah.
I'm relatively good at taking an idea and making it better.
Yeah.
But I think that's kind of the skill set is I don't get flustered. You know, I don't panic. And so like when COVID hit, everyone panicked like crazy. And I remember being in that management meeting and I actually wasn't panicked. I wasn't putting it on. I was like, it's okay. Yeah. We are a good set of business people. We will get through this. And you know, 8 months later, someone referenced the other day, they were like, I didn't know if you were putting it on. Like, you know, we'd lost half our clients in like 10 days. And they were like, I don't know if you were putting it on, if you were the best actor in the world, but I actually wasn't. I was like, we will get through this. Like we will find a way. And I think that dyslexia and also the attention, the deficit problem, they do just make you resilient to, I'm going to come up with a solution to this.
Like,
because I have to.
Yeah.
Like when you just have to do it, don't you? So I don't know. I mean, I've never thought about it in those terms, but I think it's probably quite a useful framework. But to your point earlier, about like failing and stuff, I think that in a weird way, and I was thinking about this a lot on the journey over here, dyslexia creates in you a set of sort of principles or rule sets that you know that you need to live by to be normal or like to manage to at least bring yourself up to the standard.
Mm.
You know, you know that you need to do all this quite organized shit just to be able to do the shit that everyone else does. And I think in a weird way, when you get good enough to be normal as a dyslexic person, you're really disciplined in understanding how to like overcome challenges, how to see something and effectively beat it or work around it. And I think in a weird way, like that is, it's part of it. You learn to overcome challenges super, super early every day. Mm. And you've got a very, very structured, very organized way of doing it. And you don't even know that you do. And I think that that has allowed me to do what I've done in my life, which is I've really not really had a job.
Yeah, I completely agree. That's effectively, you're not worried about anything. And that's what, that's mine. I'm not worried about anything.
Yeah.
It's all solvable.
Yeah.
So if people want to get in touch with you or follow you, is it, where was the best place to find you?
My email, I suppose. I mean, I use LinkedIn, so you can find me on LinkedIn, Chris Dummy on LinkedIn. I don't really use the other social channels from a business perspective. Like, it's just me and my friends out for a drink most of the time. Find me on LinkedIn. I post a lot about, I have actually been posting recently a lot about like dealing with like inertia and dealing with like, you know, being confused about direction and goals and stuff, because obviously I'm going through a lot of that at the moment. I tend to post what I'm thinking at the time rather than what's on trend, I suppose.
Yeah.
Find me there if anyone wants to give me a shout, for sure.
One last thing. What would you say to someone? Now you're probably more, it's probably a better from a adult point of view. What would you say to someone who has dyslexia but wants to get into business? What would you say to them? What would be your advice?
Just don't fear. The there's a perception that you have an inability to do something. Like, don't make that fear, you know, don't turn that into fear. I would just see that as a positive. Like, you and I are living proof of people who clearly have some weaknesses and yet are doing well in life because they've turned what is a negative into a positive. Like, you give a really hard problem to you and I right now in this room, and you give us 24 hours. We're coming out with 10 solutions.
Mm.
And I just don't be scared of that weakness, because there are people who are frankly fucking good at the thing that you're scared of doing. And you're scared that is this sort of your weakness. And if you're smart, you will do the thing that you're good at. And that's it. That's all I would say. And funnily enough, you know, I've been saying that to someone recently a lot. So I hope they go ahead and launch their business.
Brilliant. Well, thank you, Chris. You've been amazing.
Thank you for
coming on. It was great talking.
Cheers, mate.
It really has been inspiring, and I hope everyone listening has got as much as I have. Chris, I know we'll all be watching you in the future and see what great things you achieve. Next week on The Invisible Gift, we'll be speaking to educational dyslexic expert Paloma Ford. Paloma's not actually dyslexic, so we're going to be talking to her about how she got into this field and how she started up an award-winning dyslexia training business. She gave us insight into dyslexic children's mindset and how it impacts the other children around them. And if that isn't enough to whet your appetite, you'll be hearing more about me and my personal journey in education. She is a force to be reckoned with. Do not miss this episode. Just a couple of quick notes before we go. They're important ones. First off, make sure to subscribe to The Invisible Gift wherever you listen to podcasts, so you can automatically be notified about new episodes. One thing that's really important to me is to hear what you guys think about the podcast. I want to hear more about the challenges you're facing, what you're trying to change in your own life, work, and family, and hear your inspiring stories of how you've overcome the odds to achieve the incredible. I know, because so many of you are dyslexic, that asking you to write something to me is not going to work. So I've worked with the production team on The Invisible Gift, and we've come up with an idea. Grab your phone and record us a voice note. If you've got an iPhone, use Voice Memos. On Android, the options are endless. Once you're happy with your message, you can email it to me. My email address is andrew@theinvisiblegift.com. I would love to start sharing some of your audio notes and stories in future episodes. Also, and I'm really excited about this, head to theinvisiblegift.com, because that way you can see the amazing artwork that has been commissioned to go along with each episode this season, and also find out more about each of the guests I've had the pleasure of speaking to on the podcast. If all of this is way too much for you, I get it.
I'm starting a newsletter that includes all this and more, and it will come straight to your inbox. It's so simple to sign up at theinvisiblegift.com. You've been listening to the Invisible Gift podcast, presented by me, Andrew Kitley, and produced by One Fine Play. This episode was recorded by Kazra. From One Fine Play, James Bishop is the executive producer. Kazra is the audio and visual engineer. Connor Foley is the editorial producer and researcher. Special thanks to Christina, Izzy, and the Cube Studios. Thank you for listening to the Invisible Gift podcast.